Holcomb's pick for the Indiana Supreme Court. College going hits a new low in Indiana. Plus, Mitch Daniels leaving Purdue and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending June 17th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
Appellate Judge Derek Moulter will be Indiana's newest Supreme Court Justice. Governor Eric Holcomb chose Moulter from among three finalists to replace retiring Justice Stephen David. Holcomb calls Moulter a forward thinker who is humble and caring and collaborative.
Someone who has long-term vision for our state and for the judicial system.
Moulter will become the 111th justice in the state's history, 108 of whom, including Moulter, are white men. Asked whether Hoosiers should be concerned about that lack of diversity, Moulter noted that the current court has been working on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
That's certainly an important part of the court's mission, and I look forward to doing my part to continue that legacy and advance that ball forward.
Moulter joined the Indiana Court of Appeals last October. Prior to that, he worked in private practice. Is this a missed opportunity to diversify the bench? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Greg Stowers. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of State's Newsroom Indiana. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, did the governor miss a chance here?
Diversity is really important. Diversity for the sake of it is, you know, it could be damaging to both sides. You got to be balanced a little bit and make sure you have an open process where you're actively recruiting and encouraging people from all backgrounds to apply. And that's why I like the process we have in Indiana. We have a nominating commission. It operates in public. Anybody can apply to, who's qualified can apply to serve in a vacancy like this. Those interviews are public. Public can go attend. And then three recommendations are handed off to the governor, and he picks from one of them. And of the three that he had to choose from, he had two white men and a white woman who all had great experience, and great backgrounds. So one category I'd like to start thinking about in terms of diversity, since most of this country is now run by people who are in their 80s running for re-election, is youth. And Derek Moulter checks that box.
Yeah,
I think he'll be the youngest,
I believe that's
one of the youngest in the
40,
state as a judge, and he'll be certainly the youngest on the court. So I do like the diversity in youth and age.
Nikki, to Mike's point, I think we talked to the governor about this after that press conference, and he said, I have to choose who I have to choose from. And he also pointed to the fact that he's appointed, I think it's something like 74 judges across the judiciary, and has focused his efforts on diversity, at least tried to in those ranks, which is where really the governor has the power to do that, right?
Right, and he's got a good record on those in terms of gender, but when I did a story recently, they weren't even tracking ethnicity of the judges he appointed. So, I don't know exactly how diverse those 74 have been. But again, the three people that come to him are the three people who come to him, you know, and that nominating commission that Mike mentioned is made up of not only attorneys, but some lay people too. And so you have a little bit of, you know, both sides looking at it, and then he has to choose one of the three.
The Chief Justice has talked a lot, even in the interviews with the candidates with the Judicial Nominating Commission that the Chief Justice serves on. She asked questions about needing greater diversity, not just on the Supreme Court, but across the court system. How big of an issue should that be for Hoosiers to be thinking about?
I think it's a big issue. I think it's important to make sure that we are not only saying that we're committed to diversity, but taking those steps and creating pools of people and letting people know the importance of taking these steps and trying to ascend to these positions. Because if as corny as it sounds, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And when we look at the history of the Supreme Court, it looks one way. And I think it's important for people to see that opportunity is out there.
John, thinking about all of the candidates that even the Judicial Nominating Commission had to choose from, I think only two of them were people of color out of a dozen or so. So just getting people to apply in the first place seems to be part of the issue here too.
Sure, we'd love to see the state bar. I mean, all of people who are admitted to practice in the state of Indiana to be
the color of students in law school.
Sure,
right now.
I mean, it all has to do with the pipeline. And you're right, we need to focus on all of those things. I think the profession has certainly focused on it. Loretta Rush and others on the court here and around the country have focused on it. So I think that is important. This is enshrined, of course, our mechanism, which I think Mike's right. This is one of the best. We may be 47, 48 in a lot of things, but I'm here to say if I had a foam finger with a big number one, I'd say we're probably one. I love the way we choose Supreme Court judges in this state. It is an open process.
And appellate court judges.
There are some states where it's done by the legislature. Can you imagine that? There are some states where it's divvied up by geography. You know, you have somebody representing a district. Some places have moved to partisan elections. Many places have nonpartisan elections, quote unquote. Thank goodness we don't have that. Because if you look, this has been enshrined in the Constitution since, what, 70 or 71? Everybody on the court now.
I wasn't born.
You weren't born. Well, that's that young vote that he's talking about.
I've never won an argument. Angelini is older than me. Like, but did stuff when I wasn't alive.
So under this system, I think the new justice is maybe number 14, I think, 13 or 14 in that system. So everybody on the court now has been produced through that mechanism. And I think you look back at people who have served since this was put in place, it is a heck of a good court in terms vis-a-vis the rest of the country. Also, last point, there are statutory guidelines on what the commission is supposed to consider among candidates. They have to do with the educational background. They have to do with the practice of law. They have to do with financial conflicts of interest, potentially. Right. All these sorts of legal writings. If you really want to emphasize that, and there's kind of a catch-all in there that's other things that are important, but maybe the General Assembly, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah,
but,
I was just going to say, I wouldn't be holding my breath on that.
Could say they want to make that a priority, not a defining factor, but a priority, because it's silent on that issue now.
Well, the number of Indiana high schoolers who went straight to college fell to just over 50% during the first year of the pandemic. And from WFYI's education desk, Dylan Piers McCoy reports, that's the sharpest decline in at least a generation.
Indiana has a problem. Not enough adults have college degrees and credentials that prepare them for good-paying jobs. And many high schoolers don't think going to college is worth it. Only 53% of high schoolers who graduated during the first year of the pandemic went straight to college, a 6 percentage point drop. A new state report says it's part of an accelerating trend over the prior 5 years. Indiana Commissioner for Higher Education Chris Lowry says the decline is alarming and a threat to the state's economy. The largest decline was among Black students, who saw the college-going rate fall to about 43%.
So, Greg, going to college in this report isn't just a four-year college. This is anything from getting a less than 1 year certificate all the way up through a 4 year college. And in light of that, how troubling are these numbers?
The numbers are troubling in a general sense, obviously. As I look at the number of Black students, I think it's important to note that recently the Indiana chapter of the NAACP put out a report where they detailed 15 pieces where the state of Indiana can do a better job in terms of highlighting promoting Black students. And I think it's also important to note that going to college is important, right? And success doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go to college. But the question that I have for those that may have that same mindset is, what kids are we talking about, right? Because when I was a high school student, I knew I was going to college. So when we talk about you can be successful without going to college, which students are we actually talking about? And when we look at the numbers from students from more affluent neighborhoods to those in poor neighborhoods, I think that's something that definitely needs to be addressed.
When we talk about you don't need to go to college to be successful, when we look at how this report is defined, you have to some sort of attainment after high school. You need that to be successful, because every number in the world tells us if you don't do anything after high school, you aren't going to find a good job, you aren't going to make as much money the rarest of exceptions that would be at best anecdotal. So in light of that, again, we've talked so many times on so many issues on this show about, yes, the pandemic affected things negatively across the board, but these numbers were already going down over the course of a decade.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was a problem before, which was why the states spent so much time trying to crack this workforce problem, right? And partner with we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and partner with the private sector. COVID, whether you were heading to college naturally or not, the idea of in the summer of 2020 going to college so you could sit in your dorm and stare at a computer and not leave your room was horrible, right? Which is one of the reasons Mitch Daniels, charted a much different path.
There's a reason to think that this number probably goes up in 2021, just from some people who probably took a year off just to wait to see how the pandemic.
I'm not going to go become a plumber because I am going to go to college. So we're going to see a rebound, but the legislature needs to step back in like they did last time and put money toward learning loss and COVID that we know we have lost probably two solid years of gains from kids K to 12 and beyond. The state is focused on investing and catching up. But look at other numbers. Our workforce participation rate is incredibly low. We have this really low unemployment rate, but if you look at the participation rate, it clouds it.
Yeah.
Because people just aren't transitioning from high school into a career or college.
So, to Mike's point just now, the Indiana General Assembly spent a bunch of money on learning loss in the 2021 session. The federal government spent even more than that, obviously magnified because it's the federal government, on learning loss. Is it time for, when we're looking ahead to the 2023 budget, there's going to be money spent on education, no question about that, but is there some that needs to be pinpointed to helping pull us back up?
Probably so. Again, the other side of the argument is money has already been, flowing pretty feverishly into those coffers. So there'd be an argument at what point you say enough is enough. Well, I would say we're not there yet because what I have always have in recent years voiced concern about is having a segment of the population that has an asterisk next to that person, his or her name, when he or she enters the workforce. This was somebody.
You were a COVID person.
This was a COVID. And even joked about in the practice of, in the professions, medicine. You had a bunch of people who never had the rite of passage of dealing with anatomy in class with a cadaver. So they're already getting ribbed.
Bar exam, right?
They're getting ribbed by their physicians.
Class.
Yeah. There were admission exams waived. There were, in fact, professional licensing exams waived. I don't want these folks to have an asterisk. I want them to be able to flourish long-term economically. So if it takes more investment now, I suppose that's better than having this dog them for 40, 50 years of a career.
Because Mike just referenced it too, but we talk about this. It's not just, you need an education. It's if you want to be set up for success for the rest of your life and what the best guess is of what the economy of the future is going to look like, you can't just go to high school the way you could 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, I have a young daughter who had to wrestle with these decisions. She didn't want to go to college. She thought it was too expensive, which it is. And the idea of sitting in a four-year school to take a bunch of classes that aren't on target for what she's doing. But at the same time, I think people need to understand you have to have some training. I don't care what it is, but you need something. And I do think it's fair to say that we need to review all the money that we've had for years, these workforce ready grants and things like that, where we're practically doing these certificates and these associate's degrees, paying for them for free, and yet it's still apparently not making much difference.
Yeah.
And obviously the whole nation saw this drop, but our drop was steeper than the rest of the nation, so there's got to be something systemic there.
All right, Purdue, speaking of higher education, Purdue University, Purdue University, I didn't even do that on purpose. Purdue University President Mitch Daniels announced plans recently to step down at the end of this year.
Daniels has served as Purdue's president since 2013, taking the position after two terms as the governor of Indiana. Daniels says he has no plans for what comes next yet.
I think there'll be a next, my duty is right here for 7 more months.
Daniels will be replaced by Purdue's own Meng Chiang, who currently serves as the school's dean of engineering. He says he's honored to step into the role.
It is, with no exaggeration, the highest, the most humbling honor that I could ever imagine. I love Purdue. I love this place. It is unlike any other.
Chiang will officially replace Daniels on January 1st, 2023.
Nikki Kelly, let's start by talking about Mitch Daniels. What makes the most sense to you for his next stop?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the fun part is all the speculation, right? I mean, toss everything out there. You know, could he run for president? Could he seek a third term for governor? Could he try to take over the NCAA and bring that back to sort of life?
Don't forget Major League Baseball.
Oh, Major League Baseball, yeah.
He does have a passion for
baseball. I think he would let Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, too. But anyway, so he's got all these choices, but you also got to remember, like, what serves him, you know?
He's 73 now.
He was amazing to cover as a journalist for a governor, but I'm not sure how he would top those 8 years. I'm not sure what he would stake another term on. So that's an interesting discussion for him to have with his family about his options.
John, what do you think makes the most sense for Rich Daniels to do next?
He's going to have to figure out something, and because he's not somebody who.
I mean, he doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to. I'm not suggesting
but
he's going to be
knowing
hungry.
Knowing Mitch Daniels feels like he's going to have to.
He doesn't. He won't be in any soup kitchen line. No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying his makeup is such that he has to do something that contributes, I think, to the discussion, to the debate, not just sheer political debate, but the debate over ideas. He's always been a wonk. I mean, what was it George Will said about him, that he was the, in terms of brain power to mass, you know, nobody's, those aren't his words exactly, but I think it was a compliment, actually. He is a brainy.
Ratio to mind to mass.
Mind to mass, there you go. Better alliteration, than I served up here. But he's too valuable to the state, he's too valuable to the country, to higher ed, to sports, to whatever endeavor, to just go and play golf,
feel like
if he even plays golf.
It feels like it would be a little bit of a waste to just have him go sit on a bunch of boards, which is what he could do at this stage.
Yeah, when I said he can't do that, I'm saying his makeup won't let him do that. Certainly financially, he could.
So there is increasing chatter about the idea of Mitch Daniels running for a third term as governor, which the term limits in Indiana are, I think you can only serve 8 years in a 12-year period. So now he is well out of that 12-year period and could run for two more terms if he really wanted to. Do you think that makes a lot of sense for Mitch Daniels to do?
I think there will be. First of all, let me say, as a Mitch alum, I owe literally everything great in my career. But I owe to 2004 and the years that followed, working in his office, having the honor to work around him. Having said that, literally, my entire life, I'm sitting in this chair, not in life, like this physical chair because of him. The world is much different. So if that's the path he's going to go down, there's certainly a path for him, of course. I mean, but the party is so different. The state electorate has followed the party in those changes largely, and the makeup of the Indiana voter has changed substantially since 2004 and the reasons he was elected and successful to begin with. So that's got to be thought of. He's had to sit on the sideline of making any kind of political commentary as president of Purdue. The best thing with him retiring, in my mind, is that he gets to re-enter that in a major way and hopefully breathe some sense back into a Republican Party that, if you're, you know, the daily example this week is watching January 6th and the Republicans just blow it off like it was no big deal.
But isn't a great way to do that as the mouthpiece of the Indiana Republican Party as the
governor? If that's how he wants to do that, we do have... he was a savior at a time the party was in the wilderness, right? And we could not win. And he brought it back and reformed state government and was incredibly successful in that. The dynamics of him coming back in are different. Is it?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different situation. So am I for it? Of course. Do we have to think about, can we just rinse and repeat and get back on the RV and do it all over again? No, it's got to think.
Is that
RV look
in someone's barn somewhere?
It's got to be somewhere. What do you think is the best fit for Mitch Daniels going forward?
You know, I'm perfectly fine with governor riding off into the sunset. But I think when we think about the current state of Indiana, the need for that moderate voice, specifically with the Republican Party, is going to be really important. And I think he could play a really great role in doing that. You don't necessarily have to be an elected official to do that. I think he has done far enough to be that person that the Republican Party needs.
Before we move off this topic, I want to ask about a different part of this, which is, this was all done very quietly. I don't know the engineer, the dean of the engineering school, Dean Meng. I'm sure he'll be a great choice. But for a public university, do you question the process in choosing this replacement?
Yeah, I mean, I've not seen that process where I went to school or any other of the major, you know, vacancies around the state. It was very shocking that they... you know, announced it on the same day. And I think people, I think it's fair for people to feel like they were left out of the process, because they absolutely were.
Does this matter more that it's a public university than, I mean, if it were a private university, you can do whatever the heck you want.
Absolutely.
But I mean, at a public university, should the process have been more public?
Probably so. Absolutely. I think there are a lot of factors at work here. The engineering dean was a hot commodity.
I'm not questioning the choice.
So I think there's some practical realities. But you're right. A public institution, any institution that's about shared governance. Remember the faculty protests? There were pickets and whatnot when Mitch Daniels was first appointed. Now that had gone away, but they were questioning whether he, because he didn't have a terminal degree, well, JD, PhD, we can debate whether one is terminal, but they didn't think he was qualified academically. Now, ironically, we will have, you know, perhaps other protests among the Senate, faculty Senate and others saying that we needed to weigh in. Because if you think state government deals on task forces and study committees, that's nothing compared to higher education, which prizes the notion of a faculty-led search committee.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is, should Mitch Daniels run for political office once he's left Purdue? A, yes, or B, no. Last week, we asked you if Governor Holcomb's plan to send $225 to Hoosiers is the best way to provide inflation relief. Just 25% of you say no. 75% apparently read Mike Hicks's thing and said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, extreme heat, and if you've stepped outside in the last week, extreme heat could lead to an energy emergency in Indiana and 14 other states this summer as people and businesses use more electricity for air conditioning. That's according to a report by the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. Save that five times fast. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, it said there's not enough energy on the regional grid to meet peak demand.
That could mean borrowing energy from other grids, asking industrial buildings to use less energy, and, worst case scenario, having rolling blackouts. That's where utilities cut power to certain areas for short amounts of time to prevent big, widespread outages. Danielle McGrath is the president of the Indiana Energy Association. She says trying to use less energy between 4 to 6 p.m. is helpful if you can, but Hoosiers likely won't have to change their energy use.
To the extent that there's an actual call to action, the companies will reach out if and when that would need to occur.
Energy demand is up slightly since last summer as businesses return to normal since the pandemic. Coal plants retiring early has also led to a shortfall of energy that can be dispatched quickly. McGrath says because of this, some utilities are building new power sources or postponing coal plant retirements.
John Schwannis, is Indiana adequately prepared for this?
Well, the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission, through a spokesperson, says that nothing is 100%. And so that's the entity, one of the entities that's charged with making sure we can have lights go on when we flip the switch. And we can probably stipulate that this is a system put together by humans. Mother Nature serves up some surprises from time to time.
And Indiana isn't on an island here, right?
No, it's not. And in fact, the management, electrical management system, for a number of states in the Midwest, based in Carmel, sort of this thing that flies under the radar. Nobody, you know about the power companies, but you don't know where the real power resides. No, you know, pun intended, I suppose.
Very
intended, John. But this is, it does make one group of people look pretty smart, and that is the people who used to get ridiculed. I might have even ridiculed them a little bit in the General Assembly, who were backers of the so-called moratorium. They didn't want to move too quickly in terms of allowing power generators to abandon coal and other fossil fuels
because
they were worried about the capacity issues. That's what Ed Soliday and others, state rep from Valparaiso, said. And he probably is sitting there in his air-conditioned comfort saying, this is exactly what I was talking about.
Brace yourself for this. Congressional Republicans in Indiana are blaming Joe Biden for this potential problem. But is there blame to go all the way around?
I mean, this is a national, issue. I mean, obviously, when you talk about helping the environment and removing coal plants and things like that, there is a balancing act between reliability and, these polluters that, yes, they have great air conditioning. We can all do whatever we want. But, there's a give and take on that. So, yeah.
And potentially, you do have crank radios that you can still listen to the show. So just, I just want people to
back
be aware
from
of
70 and 71.
Oh, back in the day.
Realistically, is there anything Indiana can do in the short term, or is it just going to have to ride out this summer and hope for the best?
I don't necessarily hope for the best. I mean, I think to John's point, nothing is 100% sure, but I think maybe not from the short term, but for the long term, what are we doing to invest in green energy? What are we doing to invest in green jobs? I'll say it as the Democrat on this panel, climate change is real. And luckily for us, TV doesn't have temperature, so I think we're fine here. But we're seeing these cases, and it's important that we're investing in the long term, not necessarily the short term, but the long term.
Very quickly, but Governor Holcomb kind of said that when he was asked about this. He said, we need to be making sure that we are diversifying, that we are drawing from as wide a pool as possible. But that's not a short-term answer. I mean, it's not the short-term solution.
We're not doing anything for, like, the air conditioner working on Tuesday.
Right.
But one thing, it's transition to coal. The market followed. We're transitioning to renewables. One thing we didn't anticipate was locals saying, we don't want the solar farm in our... And so now you've got all these projects that are... We shuttered the coal plant and then killed the renewable project and allowed that to happen because county, some town council didn't want it.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Greg Stowers, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of States Newsroom Indiana. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.